Thanks, John. Good morning, and thanks to Cedar for the opportunity to be here this morning. It's never unexpected with Tim that you get a photo of the kids and the dog, but I must admit I was a bit thrown by his 34 Ford, so I just thought I'd better see him and raise him and maybe just make a couple of points about sort of stimulus packages and support for industries along the way. Those three magnificent vehicles, I'm proud to say, are in my collection, and they're all made by General Motors, and they're all from 1967. And it's worth reflecting that in 1967, General Motors, in fact, produced 50% of the vehicles manufactured in the world that year. Quite interesting when you have a look, and whilst I think those cars were absolutely incredible for their time, it's fair to say that over the ensuing 42-odd years, General Motors seems to have kind of lost its way. And what I wanted to just very quickly show you was what happens when you lose your way. And that's just a chart going back some 9-odd years. And you can see market cap of 55-odd billion down to 1.6 billion the other day. I don't know what it was last night. Might be worth reflecting on the fact that that market cap is in fact less than Andrew Forrest's current net worth. Quite incredible. And to another company very quickly, Apple. And I'm a proud owner of a new Apple iPhone, which I think is one of the most amazing devices. And you might want to just have a quick look at what's happened with Apple. And again, this is only going back 9-odd years. Started back in 2020, what was it, 16, 17 billion, up to 175 billion. And even after all the turmoil, and we'll talk a lot about markets, we've still got a market cap of some 70-odd times General Motors, 81-odd billion. I call that value creation. And I think if you're going to have a look at what you want to support with your precious stimulus package money, with your precious taxpayers' money, and it isn't just something to talk about as far as it might relate to the US, but certainly it's going to be important and relevant here. You might want to think about how well management's done with innovation, with trend anticipation, and how much value they've added. And I know for a fact which industry or which company I'd support if I had some limited dollars to do it with. We know what happened in the 90s with Japan. We want to make sure we don't want to repeat the same mistakes either here or elsewhere around the world in putting money to people and to companies and organisations that simply don't deserve it and have demonstrated over a very extended period that they are not good managers, not good anticipators of trends. So just on that quick upmarket note, that quick optimistic note, just I wanted to talk about a number of things, not just, I guess, equities, but property, debt, the banks, and also commodities, China, currencies, etc. You would have seen, and in fact I've got it on my iPhone if you want to have a look, that the Dow was in fact down 4.24% last night to 6,629. I've got the S&P and I've got all the other markets as well. What that actually is showing us is we're actually in new multi-year lows. I've got some charts later, but pretty significant when markets are trading where they were 12, 13 years ago. Property, obviously cap rates are going up in the industrial and commercial space and values are falling. Interest rates are at multi-decade lows, 45, 50 years since we've seen rates here and in the US, and 300 or 400 and something years in the UK, pretty significant. We'll talk a bit about the impact of the government guarantee in banks. Commodities, on the charts I look at in the supply and demand equation, and certainly as far as it relates to iron ore, commodities seem to be basing. And gold certainly has been a standout. Lots of mixed signals from China. Why there's so many factories closing, but there's actually increased demand for iron ore and steel. And the outlook next week, well, as Tim says, you tell me. My father used to say when he was asked what the market was doing, "Madam, if I knew that I wouldn't be talking to you, I'd be sitting in the south of France with my feet in a bucket of champagne." And it's a bit like that. Certainly maybe a bit easier to see the next 12, 24 months, but the next few weeks and indeed a few short months are very much dependent upon sentiment and what governments do. So, just quickly on markets, charts do tell a story. Our market again made a new low yesterday, multi-year low, down a couple of percent. It's down again today, although not too badly, and seems to be telling a story that we've fallen fairly heavily and don't seem to want to really follow and dramatically, slavishly follow what's going on in other markets around the world. The dotted line actually takes you back to 1999. I think it's 97 before you get these levels on the S&P in the US. And again on the FTSE, just a little blip there, but going back again 10, 12, 13 years. So we've actually given up a huge amount of the rises of the last number of years. And we'll talk a bit about the ramifications of that in a minute. The Nikkei again. So I just wanted to overlay and show you that most of these markets that we relate to on a regular day-to-day basis have really damaged a huge amount of confidence and wealth, and we're in fact across the board at new multi-year lows. And the significance of that is we all know markets look ahead 6-12 months to anticipate what the economy is going to be doing, and if that holds true this time, then there ain't going to be any quick turnaround in the economies. So the standout, I guess, has been China, which seems to be the only market that I could see that's actually holding above where it was just maybe 3 or 4 years ago, having fallen dramatically, it's fair to say, but certainly still holding quite well, and indeed, if anything, over the last few weeks has kicked up on the back of a very oversold position, but also where the iron ore and steel sentiment, I guess, has improved quite a bit. So just again, peak to current, the Shanghai market down about 65, the FTSE down over 40, the ASX over 50, and the S&P over 50 as well. All, really quite significant and dramatic falls, and as I said, have damaged a huge amount of wealth along the way. The point, I guess, is that this performance is the worst since the 1930s. No one alive has seen markets like this. We heard about the wealth effect on the way up, where people were using their paper wealth to go out and consume, whether it was their equity portfolio or whether it was their house going up in value. And obviously, with the kinds of falls we've seen, then you get that fairly dramatic reverse wealth effect. And that's not to say that, things like Opus and Lyft don't damage sentiment as well. Redemptions from investment funds, the money managers have been seeing huge amounts of redemptions. Hedge funds to a significant degree have disappeared. There's been those bear raids, short selling. Quite significant avalanche of really quite poor news, all of which has a very significant effect on sentiment. Historic notional yields look actually very attractive, as I've got on this next chart, and with the government bond yields falling, it certainly makes one question whether cash is going to be king for much longer. It has to be looked at, though, in the context of the fact that, as we're seeing almost every day, companies are, in inverted commas, prudently slashing their dividends to hang on to cash. And to pay down debt, which is the current mantra that the market requires. So that dynamic of lower returns on safe haven investments like government bonds and more risky investments like the stock market need to be seen in context of that blue line coming down as dividends are reduced. The property sector, we're all exposed to that one way or the other. What's interesting, if you have a look, and I'm sure many of you are aware of it, if not all of you, the impact of very small movements in cap rates on valuation of commercial and industrial property. And all I've got there is a 1.4% move up in the cap rates to do with CBD commercial property, having a 19% impact, or causing a 19% fall in the underlying value of the real estate. We'll talk a bit more about what that means later, and that's in a context of rent staying the same, which they won't, and what happens as far as loan-to-value ratios and what the banks then do about it. But just as rates can move, just as values, sorry, can move quickly when the market's strong, when markets turn and risk becomes something people are concerned about, the impact on the equity value that's left after debt in some of these property investments is actually very, very significant, and that's what we're seeing at the moment. In Western Australia particularly, the only real pain so far in the residential sector has been in probably some of the hotter areas like Mandurah and Dunsborough, maybe the western suburbs and maybe some of the outer suburbs. But in terms of the long-term trend, it's a lagging indicator, and perhaps we've still got to see a bit more time pass and maybe a few more forced sales. But I guess residential prices are off maybe 20%, and that's got to be seen in the context of the kind of doubling in prices over 2 or 3 years that we saw prior. So it's not surprising. Painful if you've bought recently, but not nearly as bad as what's happened in the US and in Europe, and the fact that obviously those property markets have in fact in many cases bought banks down. We obviously need to be aware of the impact of rising unemployment, which Tim talked about, prospect of mortgagee sales, and we need to obviously be concerned about the impact of just sentiment generally on the property market. And talking of sentiment, I put up a number of charts of REITs, which has been a place where a lot of people have put their superannuation money. Rather than dealing directly in property, they've decided that some of these household names are the place to invest. And this is where you see the most dramatic impact of a rising cap rate across the property sector. Some of the falls in these listed real estate trusts have just been nothing short of catastrophic. And given that lots of money has been tied up, especially from retail investors, but also institutional investors in this space, you can see why there's been such a dramatic impact on that wealth effect and on sentiment. And it's of considerable concern. There's some more here. The kinds of falls are really quite unprecedented. And the issue now is going to be, given that a lot of these companies are having a great deal of trouble raising capital, some of them are preemptively going out, like Westfield, before they may be seen to need to. But some of the others, in the context of demand from banks for more equity as loan-to-value ratio covenants are breached, basically are going to find it very difficult. And it's ironic because in some cases, in many cases, the interest rate covenants and income covenants are actually improving. You've got this asset-based loan-to-value ratio covenant breach. And the banks are going to have to make a decision about what to do, because if they force sales of a lot of this underlying property, it's just going to become self-fulfilling, and you'll see obviously further impact on banks' balance sheets. It's just something we all need to be worried about. Just got some debt charts up here, only really to show that we are in unprecedented territory again in terms of the cost of debt. And I do find it quite interesting that you're seeing this wholesale chase for repayment of debt in a context that the cost of debt, if you can get it, and Tim's point is very valid, it's very hard to get it, but the cost of debt is in fact the lowest it's been for, pick a number, 40 years, 45 years, and the cost of equity is as expensive as it's been for probably 20 or 30 years. And it's that whole tribal thing. It's also about sentiment, it's about fashion. Remember when we used to hear about lazy balance sheets and how poor management was if they let too much debt build up or not enough debt. And that's probably a short 2 years ago. And I've got some charts later to show the impact of that. But just again, multi-year lows, multi-decade lows for interest rates. And I just think that it's just really interesting. You've seen a bit of a kick up in US Treasuries over the last few days, weeks, just because there's so much supply. You have to think of this as an inverse. And supply obviously means that prices go down, yields go up. Although again, with the markets being so weak just in the last few days, and this is breaking news like CNN, it changes every day. Some of those charts are actually trailing back down as yields fall, simply because of the safe haven status of some of these vehicles. We've heard a lot about funding costs. And this is all tied in. If you just think about it, obviously money greases the system, whether it's equity or whether it's debt. And there's obviously heaps more debt in the system than there is in equity. So when the credit markets basically froze up in November, and obviously Tim referred to what happened with trade credit, but basically it was a very significant problem in the sense that normal sort of systems and flows just stopped happening, and banks in fact refused to lend to each other, as we all know. So really, basically, we've seen it unfreeze, as it were, and loosen up, but we've still got historically very, very high funding costs for the banks, and we'll talk a bit about the guarantee in a minute. This has obviously been a significant trend as well, where the shortage, you can look at all sorts of reasons why it happened, but the funding base for domestic banks has fallen away over time. So they've increasingly turned to foreign banks to supply the shortfall. And with those banks getting into trouble and withdrawing from the market, then we've had talk of Rudd Bank and emergency measures to actually fill the gap. But you can see that trend, which is a 20-year trend, where virtually none of the money that local banks had came from overseas, to a point where now just some 25 or so percent comes from there. It's something that's going to be painful as it unwinds. And again, money makes the world go round. If those banks are not supplying capital, then where's it going to come from? The government guarantee obviously has had a huge impact in assisting our banks to raise money overseas. I get very nervous about countries actually defaulting, because it's come close. I remember in 1973, when I was working in the UK, which is probably the last time things were this bad. They weren't as bad then as they are now. But I remember the IMF knocking on the UK's door saying that you need to get your house in order. The pound was weak. There was no North Sea oil. Thatcher hadn't come in yet. And there was talk of the UK defaulting, and it seemed so bizarre that that could have actually been the case. But the more and more governments put up guarantees, the more questions are going to be about their capacity to actually deliver. The whole thing is a sort of stare-down game. Oh, you'll never need to call this guarantee, therefore don't worry about it. But there is some concern, obviously, about that. I've just got a few, and I've not really tried to be to single anybody out here, but I just also wanted to talk about this this impact of debt, how quickly things can change. I could have put the Wesfarmers share price up there as well, but I didn't. But you've just got to have a look at what impact on small and large companies debt and the attitude to debt by investors has had. Might be a bit unfair putting Rio there specifically because of debt, because obviously commodity prices have gone down. But that's all we heard about for a few weeks not that long ago, the $9 or $10 billion worth of debt that was being needing to be rolled this year, and the $40-odd billion of debt that had been taken on with Alcan. And Fairfax, absolute train wreck. Oz Minerals we know about, Great Southern, just a little local one. And even FMG, where a lot of talk about the funding of the debt there and the whether the operations are cash flow positive or not. And as I said, I mentioned earlier that, we've got this situation where companies that were dramatically gearing up to make sure they could get good return on capital and good return on equity have now found themselves on the wrong side of investor sentiment, and a complete change in terms of the way people view them, and indeed now scramble to replace that very cheap debt with extremely expensive equity. I haven't actually gone through the number of companies that have failed. Fortunately, most of them, if not all of them, have been on the other side of the country this time. Not that we hear much about that. You can rest assured if they were failing here, we'd hear all about it. I've just picked one sector to look at for a couple of reasons. One, just to demonstrate the leverage that this space has to resources industry. Most of the companies I've put up are in fact local, and you can see the dramatic rise as the resources boom kicked in, and then obviously equally dramatic falls as that resources boom has fallen away. And when you actually kind of put them up, there's actually many of them, and it just seemed to me that the first three or four I put up are likely to have a crack at the others that I've put up there. And if anyone was looking at where there might be some investment banking activity, there has to be some consolidation in the engineering and mining services space, I would have thought. This is another interesting chart that, again, shows you where we are and where we've been. If you have a look at that, that dark blue is large cap companies raising capital. The light blue is mid caps and the grey is small. So back in Q207, no large caps raised any significant levels of equity. They were all tapping into the corporate bond market, they were tapping into bank debt markets. But look at the situation now where in Q109 there's been some very, very significant raisings by large cap companies and there's virtually no grey at all. If you then have a look at Q408, same story. So essentially what's happened is that the small caps and to a significant degree mid caps have been excluded from the equity capital markets. They simply can't access equity, which is obviously going to have a big impact down the track as this focus on debt continues. I didn't even put a chart of IPOs up. You can imagine what that actually looks like. There haven't been, I think there's been one or two this year. So again, new capital basically not available to the small sector. No sales by private equity into the equity markets, into the listed market, and just a complete freezing of that whole sector. Just a quick chat on commodities. Tim talked about the oil price. I've had a quick look at some of these charts. What it tells you is that peak, that sort of great run we had over the last 3 years has definitely come to an end, but these metals and to a certain degree energy prices are just back on trend. They're back to where they were before this all started. So we've got to look at what's going on in that context. I'm sure the cost of extraction of all these metals have gone up a lot, and that remains a bit of a bad legacy for us here. But it's just this whole sentiment thing. If you actually took out that chart between 06 and 09, you'd go, oh yeah, well, you know, it's about normal. I only put that chart up just to show you the mirror between the Shanghai index and nickel. There's obviously a little bit of a lag, but when you have a look at that whole explosive bubble in nickel and a lot of other commodities and in the Shanghai market, it just shows you how closely aligned everything was. But indeed, both again back on trend. The gold price has obviously gone up substantially, both in US dollars and because of the weakness in our currency in Aussie as well. And all I'm looking at there is that it's traditionally been a safe haven. Obviously, if people have seen just how many US dollars are being printed and the fact that euro doesn't look that healthy and who wants to be in yen, you know, what else can you do? You go to the safe haven of gold. And again, taking a 10-year view or even a longer 30-year type view, gold prices are making new ground, and indeed in Aussie, very, very strong indeed, to the point where it seems to me that in this environment of deteriorating, I guess, sentiment towards other resource stocks, mine closures, etc., that if you're a small gold producer, or even a large one, or an emerging gold producer, if you couldn't make money in this environment, you'd probably give it away. So it's a fear index, and it seems to be doing its job. Just quickly on China, again, we've heard a lot about that over the last few months and the fact that the stimulus package is in fact starting to work. There was a conundrum a while ago when we're seeing all these factories close and yet the iron ore price going up and demand for it going up and indeed steel prices going up. But it's very clearly a deliberate re-emphasis by the Chinese to be happy to close some factories that were supplying toys to Walmart to actually build domestic infrastructure again. That obviously does bode well for us because we're so leveraged to them. However, there is obviously some issue around this whole national interest. Do we like the Chinese taking a 50, 100-year view and starting to directly invest quite aggressively large sums of money in our resource companies and also in the underlying resources themselves? That's something I'm sure we could talk about a lot. But it really shows you with 2.1 million people, Western Australia is incredibly leveraged. Tim talked about the amount of money yet to be spent. It is very significant. Divide a very small population into a very large number and very large underlying value of the resources themselves, and we haven't even talked about uranium that can come down the track, then you can be forgiven to be quite optimistic about Western Australia in the context of a pretty gloomy world. I love this. No one had heard about the Baltic Dry Index about a year ago, and now everyone knows about it. It's that measure of the demand, effectively, for bulk shipping capacity. And yes, if you could have bought the Baltic Dry Index back in late 08, you'd have made a lot of money in the next 2 months. I don't think you can. Again, iron ore demand and inventories, quite interesting story there, very much off the bottom, and still looking like they're going to hold up quite well. We hear a lot about the manipulation of inventories to get leverage on the price negotiations, and I'm sure a lot of that's very real. Same with coal. Coking coal prices, having done nothing for that length of time, are actually having come back quite a way, still significantly above trend. And just quickly on currencies, you would have thought that with the amount of dollars being printed and the outlook for more and more of them, that the US dollar would be pretty unhappy and pretty weak. The problem, I guess, is that it looks like Europe's quite a lot sicker, and so people haven't been flocking to the euro. They continue to buy US treasuries, and they continue to view the US dollar as a safe haven. As far as our currency is concerned, obviously we've had that dramatic fall from just under a dollar to about 62, 63. It's fair to say, running budget deficits, trade deficits, and in a lower commodity environment, it's hard to actually get too enthusiastic about our currency, other than if you think that there's going to be a major kind of Armageddon-type impact in the US, you really wouldn't want that. In other words, if there's a complete sort of fall away of enthusiasm for the US dollar. So just quickly on outlook, and again, this is what we're supposed to be doing, but again, it's so hard. Hard to imagine that earnings and equity markets aren't going to remain under pressure. You would have thought that now these markets are getting pretty significantly oversold, but there's such damage to sentiment that it's going to take a while, and rather than a kind of normal V-shaped recovery, you'd imagine that the markets would want to bottom out for a while, go sideways, have everyone feel like, they're actually making some ground before they start moving forward. That says a lot about what's likely to happen in the economy and the economies for the next 2 months if markets are, as usual, good predictors of the future. I can't help but think there will be more fiscal stimulus thrown at markets. That's what governments do, that's what politicians do, both here and overseas, and as Tim said, we do have some further capacity for that. China and India have been everyone's talked about how they're going to drag the world through all of this. Well, I'm not so confident about that. Interest rates have to stay low, although again, if you look at a supply and demand equation and the amount of borrowing that governments have to do, and we've even heard about our own government, state government, needing to borrow significant amounts of money, then on a supply and demand basis, people will be demanding high returns for that. So longer term rates are likely to go up a bit. I do think the government borrowers are going to crowd corporates out, particularly. When you hear about the amount of money that needs to be raised by governments, it makes you wonder about how corporates are going to access that market with much weaker ratings. And we're not really that used to asset deflation. Obviously, most of us have enjoyed, certainly in the last 20-odd years, significant asset inflation. And when you actually can buy something for less tomorrow than you bought it today, maybe we've had that experience with flat-screen TVs, but when everything is going to be cheaper tomorrow, next week and next month, then you delay the purchase. And when everyone delays the purchase, then that causes this major problem in production and that whole paradox of thrift that we know about. In Australia, again, I think rates will come off some more. There is a point, of course, at which rates have no impact, as we saw in Japan. Can't push a piece of string. So whilst they're used as a way of stimulating sentiment and confidence, at some point, as we've seen in the US as well, when they get down to normal levels, 2-3%, they cease to be of use as a tool, and so you fall back to fiscal policy, as we've seen. You would have thought that there would have been a lot more talk and a lot more action about creating incentives as distinct from just throwing money at people. And obviously there's ways to create incentives, payroll tax, corporate tax rates, those sorts of things. you would have thought we might have been hearing a bit more about that. Rising unemployment will be a problem here. We've very much been lagging, and that's going to be a story for this year. Unemployment will hit 7-8% in my view. There will be more corporate defaults, and that will have an impact on bank provisions. There'll be increasing pressure on small business. They have been very much crowded out of the market, the lending market, the capital market, as I said, and I think the problem there is that they've been hanging on, and I think there is going to be an issue as this year unfolds with lower revenues, pressure from the bank, and very little access to either the private equity market or the public equity markets. We will see more takeover activity. The strong will take over the week. I can't help but think BHP is going to have a crack again at Rio. We're going to see more from China, and there are companies with strong balance sheets who are going to take this opportunity to swallow up the weaker. In Western Australia, as we know, we're relatively better off. We've been very late into this cycle, which has meant that it's felt like what's going on in the rest of the world really has no relevance to us. We've got a bit more reality checks happening now, but it's going to unfold more this year, and so we need to be aware that sentiment will be deteriorating. I think that there will be consolidation in certain sectors of the economy, as I said, if you're looking for investment opportunities, I think the distressed debt market's a fascinating place to play. You can buy very good quality debt at substantial reductions from 100 cents in the dollar, in some cases down around 30, 40 cents in the dollar. So if you have a look at the underlying value of the corporation that's issued the debt, you can actually get a very high yield, and over time, as you move to the actual expiry of that debt instrument, you can actually get quite a strong capital growth as well. Oil and gas and gold will cushion the fallout from mine closures. We've heard just how much money is left to be spent, and we need to continue to look at the China factor supporting us. It's kind of two-edged sword. It helps us out a lot, but it kind of makes you feel vaguely uneasy about the next 20 or 30 years. Remember that if you've taken out insurance and things aren't as bad as you expect or had expected, then all that's going to cost you some opportunity costs. You're going to miss out on some opportunities. But if you haven't taken out insurance, then and things are as bad or worse as you might have predicted, worse than you might have predicted, then you're going to get carted out on the stretcher with the rest of the casualties. So it really is always a good idea to be prudent. You have to avoid tribal behaviour. It's very easy in these times, and I'm not exactly helping to get wrapped up in the gloom and doom. You probably do need to listen more to the messages of confidence that this is a pretty unique place, and if you take a 5-10 year view or a much longer one, we're going to be fine. So think about those multi-generational probably opportunities, certainly multi-year opportunities that this asset deflation is throwing up, and don't be scared to take advantage of them. And if you can get access to debt, remember, if you can borrow 5-year money at 5%-ish or 5.5%, you haven't seen that since the 60s. So trust your individual instincts. I could go on for hours about the lack of value from certain advisors. So trust your instincts. And remember that optimism is a powerful force, and that optimism taken across a community can actually turn things around. So whilst this is a picture about where we are at the moment and perhaps where we're going in the next few months, don't take it that I'm actually a pessimist. I do believe in this place, and I think we'll be okay. It's just no time to be cavalier. Thanks.